and welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am your science officer for this episode, Maddie Lipchansky.
And I am the regular old captain. I'm Clayton Ashley, also.
That's right. They call him regular old captain Clayton Ashley. This week on our show, it is episode 25 of season one, 2 days and two nights, and the week of May 15, 2002.
Finally moving forward. It's felt like this has taken forever, also because of how we like structure the recording of these couple past weeks with vacations and tours and whatnot.
Summer, baby. It's tough. But we're here. We're so close to the end of the first season.
Yeah, we're just in time for September 11th.
Just in time for September 11th. Well,
we're going to miss it. It's going to be right after.
I know. It's really too bad. Anyway, so I am, as the science officer, it's my job to dig into the culture, the current events, etc. Going through the national news this week, fucking nothing happened.
Yeah, it's end of school. It's you know, it's time for summer. Just as we're leaving it, they're beginning back in 2002.
Yeah, in 2002, everyone's packing to go to Disney World. And like literally, I was looking around. Nothing happened. Like nothing of interest happened. So I'm going to dig right into...
It'd be really cool to have that again for a week.
I think stuff was always happening and we were just maybe less aware of it.
Of course.
But even then, like when I go look back, it'll be like, oh, this stuff happened that you don't remember because you weren't paying attention to it because it didn't happen in America or in your locality or whatever. But like, you know, the current events this week were like, they were Dutch elections. And I'm like, all right, it's kind of none of my business what happens in the Low Countries. No offense to the Dutch. I found Amsterdam to be perfectly lovely and had a very nice time when I was there, and I love a nice rice toffle, but I don't really care what the elections in the Netherlands in 2002 look like.
Fairly inconsequential for us.
I'm very sorry to, you know, a guy named Jurk or whatever. Let's talk about music, shall we?
Yeah.
Someone pulled the Billboard Hot 100 here. So at number one this week, still Foolish by Ashanti. We've basically forgotten to cover while Ashanti like dominates the charts now with the song Foolish.
She died
the previous fall. Mm. So this is like every Ashanti song coming out is posthumous and they are all performing like crazy because her albums are selling a lot of records. Albums are selling a lot of records, Clayton, which is a saying that is in English and makes sense to everybody who listened to it and heard it. You listening right now at home or wherever you are, heard that sentence and said to yourself, it's a good sentence.
The conversion rate of albums into records is 1-to-1.
God literally. Damn it. Literally. Okay. Also, blasting up the charts this week is Eminem's Without Me.
Oh.
Which is at number 20, but last week was at 44. Oh. So it's been
so long, but have we mentioned, is this the first time he's come up?
I think so.
We'll just say it is. Good for
what's
him.
What's your Eminem story? What's your Marshall Mathers?
I may have said it already, which is that I know he was in a commercial about how cool Detroit was. There's also a pretty funny video about him being a warlord. That is good. I mean, his music is, you know, I know he's known as being a pretty good rapper for a white guy.
Yeah, he's pretty good
basically
pretty good for a white guy.
Yeah.
I owned this album. Mm. And I thought it was pretty good at the time because my rap taste was very basic at the time. It's not incredible now, but it's better. So let's get into what is new this week, which is what I am starting to like doing for this segment instead of just looking at what's happening. Let's look at what's new. So new at number 69.
Nice.
That's the number that you can arrange yourself into while having sex with another person. It's not safe for work if you're listening to this app.
But you can say 69. That's the fun part.
That's interesting. You can't say 69, though. So at number 69, Chad Kroeger of Nickelback fame, featuring Josie Scott of Saliva fame, are doing the song Hero, which you right recognize as the song that plays over the credits during Spider-Man.
Right.
Which is currently dominating the movies.
Exactly.
I realize I should have done that one last and segued us. Segued us.
Oh, because the soundtrack was bought.
This was for the soundtrack of Spider-Man.
Interesting.
So like you would have seen at, you're at the FYE in the mall.
Right, right.
The you, album. You, Clayton, are me at 16 years old and you go to the FYE at the Trumbull Mall and you're, which is not, it's a Westfield now, but it wasn't back then, baby. But you go into the FYE, the Four-Year Entertainment, which mm-hmm. is an incredible store that's really easy to steal magic cards from if you feel like shoplifting magic cards, which I know you do.
Magic the Gathering or I'm doing magic tricks?
See, that's interesting. Magic the Gathering cards. Magic trick cards are just magic or just cards.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Fair.
For magic. Totally, I would say cards for magic, I guess. Just Magic the Gathering cards, because they keep them right next to the comic book. So what you do is you take a single booster pack of magic cards, you know, the one that has like 12 cards in it.
Oh,
and what you do
there.
Is you put that in the Batman you are pretending to read, because you mm-hmm. don't read Batman because you're sophisticated and mm-hmm. you're reading mm-hmm. Alan Moore's Swamp Thing instead. In trade paperback that you buy at the Barnes & Noble because you're a sophisticate. So, but what you do is you unwrap the magic card inside the Batman. You leave the outer wrapping of the magic card inside the Batman. You fold it back up, put that on the shelf, the magic cards, while they go in your capacious cargo pockets.
Incredible.
Because the little tag that sets off the sensor at the FYE, well, that's on the package, not on the inside.
Oh, pro tip.
Yeah. So it's a pro tip for you if you're trying to shoplift magic cards in 2002, which I know you are. Anyways, that's if you're in the FYE, one of my point was, if you're in the FYE, you see our friend Peter Parker, mm-hmm. the web slinger himself, on the cover of the CD single. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're buying. I listened to the song. I was like, I don't remember this song at all. And I listened to it and like experienced like a hyper Proustian reverie of being in the movie theater and hearing that bad boy. Fun fact about your friend, Maddie,
okay,
is I got my first and only ever speeding ticket because I was trying to make a showing of Spider-Man.
Yes, you mentioned that, and thankfully you still got to the movie.
Did I mention this already on there? Okay.
Yes.
Sorry. It's been a while.
It has been.
Okay. So, okay. At number 70, a song called The One from Gary Allen, who is a country musician I have no recollection of.
Doesn't have to do anything with the movie The One.
It has. Right? Yeah, it's Jet Li is driving a truck in the video. No, it's like... But it is the most like Walmart country, like here's a guy in a cowboy hat driving a stupid truck. And then like, but all the, so I guess this guy, Gary Allen, this song predates him losing a wife. He's been married 3 times. One of his wives died by suicide. But the entire YouTube comment section is all just men being like, my wife died as well.
God.
It's a very, very bizarre YouTube comment section that was very depressing. But if you're listening, we're recording this on September 4th. Mm-hmm. If you're listening and if you're in Mayetta, Kansas, tonight he's playing at the Prairie Band Casino Resort.
Thanks.
So go back in time
and
catch that. Oh, or he's playing at the Caesars Atlantic City on October 4th. If you'd like to go down there with me.
Oh, you'll have plenty of time to make that one.
Yeah, if you and I start walking now, we'll certainly make it by then. At number 85, the song Guess Who's Back by Scarface featuring Jay-Z and Beanie Siegel.
Why didn't you let me guess? I wouldn't have gotten it, but...
Oh, sorry. Oh, Guess Who's Back. It's by Scarface. I get it. It's really good. That is a Kanye West produced track. It's notable for that. And he's on the track uncredited as a vocal.
Oh,
Kanye West, a rapper who I don't believe was ever heard from.
Again. Yeah, it sounds familiar, but...
I think he's just sort of like a cult favorite.
I made some
kind of underground guy, Kanye West. Yeah. pretty good song. And then at last, at bringing up the rear for the new songs is Whoa Now by Be Rich, which is a song that samples the Jeffersons theme song. And for that, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out.
Yeah. So I'll take us next to Television. Which is the small screen where we live here in Star Trek Enterprise, which is what I'm calling our show now. So, one second.
I'm not on pins and needles because I already know we did in fact defeat the vile Dawson's Creek.
Yes, that is true. We've beat the vile Dawson, but only on a technicality, it appears. So the rating is a 3.1 is what we've got. The Vile Dawson is at a 3.2. We're both at a 6 share, and we both, but Dawson has 4.4 million viewers and Star Trek Enterprise is 5.3. So I don't know what the difference is with a rating. I think that has something to do with the demographics.
A better demographic.
They beat us in the demo, Clayton. They've beaten us in the demo.
They may have beaten us in the demo, but it's more embarrassing for Dawson's Creek because I'm almost certain that what I saw is it's Dawson's finale.
It is called Swan Song.
They couldn't bring it back for their finale, a season finale, I think. I don't think it's the series finale, but...
Yeah, Dawson Creek's Swan Song. It is the finale and 23rd episode of season 5, which is so interesting because there's another episode of Dawson's Creek at 9 o'clock that night that is not the same episode.
Of course.
And it's like, what are you just airing an old... It's very strange. Television used to be crazy.
But yeah, Dawson's get wrecked. You can't even pull ahead in a with your finale.
Yeah. You know, the normal shit destroying our ass here tonight. Ed, 60 Minutes 2, My Wife and Kids, according to Jim, all there.
What was the thing? I think the thing on Fox is some trash, like...
Oh, I'm going to tell you what's on Fox.
Oh, boy. Oh,
because
boy.
I wanted to talk about it. And it is a show called Breaking the Magician's Code.
Yes!
Which I don't know...
I had magic on the mind for some reason.
Oh my God. So I, okay, little background about me is I love magic. I think magic is cool. I think it is fun. I am very rarely, I'm not like fool. I'm like a fan in that like I'm generally like, oh, I understand in general how tricks work overall. Like there's not that many new ways to do things.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a very good friend growing up who did magic for kids' parties when we were teenagers. And he taught me a lot of tricks. And like he had like the lighter fluid that goes in your sleeve that you can do flash paper out of your palm.
Oh,
like
I learned to do with that. It's so
the funnest thing in the world. And I just learned a lot of card tricks. He had a lot of like the stuff you needed gear for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was just very into magic, and me and him would like watch this show and the show on Fox, and it was like this big deal because this guy was breaking and I'm realizing this is like, you know, from fucking 23 years ago, but I remember this so vividly. And it was like this guy who was like the masked magician, and he was wearing this horrible mask, and he was wearing a suit, and he would do a trick, and then a narrator would explain how the trick was done, and they'd do it again, like either in slow motion, or they'd make something clear, or they'd like remove a curtain, or like, if there's like a 45 degree mirror hiding something, they'd pull it up to show you what was happening. And it was all these like famous tricks and like well-known kinds of tricks.
Oh, man.
Showing you how they were done. And this guy is like, I can't reveal to you my identity.
Cause they'll kill me.
Because the magicians will, you know, break my legs with their big wands. And it was just like, but it was this thing that was like legitimately kind of scandalous that this guy was out there like, was breaking the code, Clayton.
This is so much better than I could have imagined.
Yeah, this is the beginning of the end for society. I think this is like where real societal breakdown begins.
The norms. They're not respecting the norms.
The magician's code is broken. the Patriot Act was passed.
Yeah.
And you could draw a straight line
uh-huh.
from then to now and all the stuff that's happening now. I'm sure. I mean, I don't keep up with the news, but I'm sure something's happening outside. I don't look at my window.
Yeah.
But... I imagine something's happening with politics, I'm sure. And you could draw a straight line from the magician's code being broken to this. I remember that I think they did a second series of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe just went on a couple of episodes. But I do recall at the end, he does end up revealing who he is.
Oh.
And everyone's like, who's the rogue magician going to be? Is it going to be like someone we've heard of?
Is it a nobody?
And it was just some fucking nobody. And he takes off his mask and he's like, it's me. Terry or something. It was very anticlimactic.
Wow. That's
but
so yeah,
the magician's code was broken, and I'll say that thing had a 5 rating with a 9 share, baby. It was beating Star Trek Enterprise.
Oh yeah.
I'll tell you that much.
God, I'm just so glad to know that you're into magic because I have the same feeling about it. It's like, yeah, it's I went to a magician's dinner in New York City. Where they did the kind of like, they did some sleight of hand, but they did the number thing where they can like predict what people are going to write down, or like they wrote something down under a glass and they revealed later they knew the whole time. My friend who I was at the dinner with got called up to do this part where they're drawing something and the magician can't see it, and then they know exactly what she drew, and it's like, I know there is probably some simple explanations going here.
There's always that's the thing about most magic tricks is there's always a very simple explanation, but the magic to me is like this clever thing where you figured out how it works. Wait, the magician's dinner did you go to? Was it the one that was at the McKittrick Hotel?
Indeed, it was.
Oh, I also went to that one.
Yeah.
Well, my wife Jaya is a food writer, and she got sent there to like talk to like interview them, like interviewed the magician and stuff.
Amazing.
And we got to go to the show, which is very cool.
Yes.
But we also recently, a couple weeks ago, went and saw Penn and Teller.
I want to. That's like the one thing I want to do in Vegas, honestly.
Well, they did a couple of shows at Radio City for their 50th anniversary of being a duo, which is crazy to consider because they're both like in their, I think Teller's in his 80s. Like, they're old.
I was going
to
say, I thought they were in retirement age, so that's incredible.
They're quite old, but they were incredible, and the show was so fun.
And they even did, I remember they did a trick that was something of a like revealing how they did it, but it was their own trick, so they could
do that all the time, and it's always so fun.
But they still keep the wonder in it somehow. Yeah, it's just it's really cool.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, I remember there's one trick where it was like they show you how it's done by making a bunch of stuff that was like opaque clear. And it's actually more impressive because you're seeing all the fucking work they're doing to keep this thing looking smooth. And
yeah,
it's very impressive.
Not like it's easy.
No. So let's talk about the movies.
Yeah.
Shall we?
The movies. Kind of magic. The movie magic.
The magic. Let's talk about the Lumiere brothers' greatest trick of all. The movies. So let's talk about what's new this week, huh? Shall we? Coming in at number 75 in the box office. It's a film called Janna's Beard, which is some British indie that I've never heard of, but it does have my man Rhys Iffins in it.
I made a gesture. I don't know.
He's the Welsh kicker from The Replacements. He's in Notting Hill. He's one of the friends. He rips.
All right.
I just like that guy. Number 64, The Lady and the Duke, a French film that's about the Marquis de Orléans. I believe it's by a French New Wave director that's kind of at the end of his career. But it's about the Great Terror, and it was accused in France of being anti-revolution, pro-aristocratic propaganda.
Wow.
Which I just love the politics of France, where they're like, this is too pro-aristocratic by depicting what happened during the Terror, which is like, I kind of agree. There was there's a film called A Shot at Glory at number 37, which is notable because it's about like
baseball.
It's about soccer, about Scottish football. It is starring a Scottish footballer named Ali McCoist, Alistair McCoist, but the other star of the film is Robert Duvall.
Oh, that's good for him.
This cast also has Cole Hauser, Brian Cox, Michael Keaton.
Okay, this is a much bigger cast than I expected. Wow.
Yeah. It's very strange, but there's absolutely nothing movie that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Back in the, a little higher up at number four, we have the film The New Guy, which I don't know if you've seen that one or remember that, but it was DJ Qualls, DJ Qualls.
Yeah.
And Eliza Dushku, it's about him going, and Zooey Deschanel and Lyle Lovett round out the cast of this one, and Eddie Griffin, of course. But it's like, you know, like gross out teen comedy that ended up making a decent amount of money, but I think kind of surprised everybody because, crucially, this week, the decks were cleared of new movies.
Yeah.
Because Spider-Man is dominating everyone's ass. Spider-Man is at number one still, by the way.
I was wondering,
in its second week, Spider-Man is still winning the box office. It's made $240 million. It made $89 million this week. It beat soundly number two, Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones.
Oh my God, of course.
Which is, so the decks were cleared for that movie to come out. So of course, the new guy's at number four. But yeah, it is,
I mean, makes sense, because that one, whew.
Not a great movie. Bad word of mouth, I think.
I imagine. God. So this is the thing is these movies, this one would have been, I was in middle school, but I'm almost positive I saw it like the week it came out.
I absolutely did. I owned The Phantom Menace on VHS.
And yeah, and like, I think I like The Phantom Menace now maybe more than I did, but I feel like back then I was even like...
No, everybody's reactions to it were pretty... I think what happened with The Phantom Menace is it was kind of boring and shitty, but they wowed you in the end with that. They got that Darth Maul fight. They got to do the Duel of the Fates.
I also still think the pod race is good.
I'm pro pod race. I mean, I think about Sebulba all the time. I was thinking about this and I was like, we are presented with an opportunity here, Clayton, you and I.
Yeah.
To be the first ever Star Trek podcast to cover a Star Wars movie.
Oh, that'd be fun.
We should maybe get that on the Patreon
because I don't
think... our next bonus episode. It'd be the only...
I'll talk about that one only.
It's been a really long time since I watched it. And you recall it being dumber than dog shit.
I'll say this. There is an alien diner scene that I remembered being great.
Is that the one with the cancer sticks?
I don't even think it's that. I think it's that there's like an alien who
It's like a Greek alien.
Yeah, and like a diner. And he stalks like he works in a New York diner.
My main remembrance of that movie is that it's Ewan McGregor doing the best like talking to a tennis ball acting of all time. Like the whole movie is just him in a completely simulated environment talking to people who are not there.
Going to another simulated environment.
Like it's him. Yeah. Like that whole movie is just him in the Nick Arcade. Kind of just like... and he's doing a pretty good job with his sight lines, I'll say.
That's we'll save that one for a bonus cast.
I believe we'll talk about
what is most likely George Lucas's worst Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say.
But I
think it'd be very funny as our Star Trek podcast to do a Star Wars episode. And we could anyways. So that is Clayton, that's the movies.
That's the movies. And now we'll talk about
the episode.
Let's boot up the hyperdrive. We're going to
get the nacelles online.
I was trying to do a Star Wars joke. I got the tech wrong. Whatever. Here we go.
You said hyperdrive when you meant...
I meant warp. Of course, I know what the
warp drive
is in Star Trek.
Get the fucking... God. What are the crystals called? Whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever.
Here we are, 2 days and two nights. It has taken us not only forever to get to this podcast recording, but also figuratively to get to Risa. And we're finally...
We've been going to Risa for like four episodes.
All this build up. And what a wet fart. It's just...
What a wet fart. A wet fart directed by Michael Dorn.
It's so unfair to him because they like... I noticed it in the notes about it. Like, obviously, but there was no budget. They ran out of budget and they got to the Risa episode. And they're we would have loved to do more. We just had no budget.
It's too bad because Michael Dorn himself... Mm-hmm. I mean, most Risa episodes are next gen.
Mm-hmm.
But the Deep Space Nine Risa episode...
Where he joins
Risa Focus on the Family.
It would have been
is so funny and good.
It would have been so great if that was something they like lampshaded here in some way. But instead, what we get is an extremely boring kind of mystery show. But that's a reach because most of the episode is just each character has a little story about their vacation. And
this is just Enterprise Coffee Shop AU. It's the beach
episode, except no one actually goes to a beach because they can't afford that in the budget. And I'll start off by here also saying, even within the show, it's kind of cheap because it's a measly 2-day vacation. That's all they get.
And they say it. It's the furthest anyone's ever gone. It's the furthest any human's ever gone away from Earth is Risa.
Uh-huh.
Which I think it's so funny to be like, this is like somebody strapped together like the Kon-Tiki to sail into the unknown to like go get a beach. It's just incredible. But like, it's the furthest anyone's ever gone ever. And like, we're going to go there for 2 days and I guess turn around
2 days. And also as I understood it, they like drew lots. So only like half the ship got to take this vacation. And I guess the other half
doesn't. Stay for 4 days, guys.
I don't know. Anyway.
Then everybody gets to go.
I'm also, you know, I literally just came back from a week-long beach vacation, which is kind of funny. And I was just like, y'all, you need, that's not a vacation. That's not relaxing if you're already like packing back up the next day. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And this is also what they're, I like this point where T'Pol, the first scene is just Archer like kind of getting ready and he's, you know, he had to be convinced to do this. And she at one point is just like, Captain, you need a vacation.
Yeah.
Get the fuck off this ship. Take your dog with you.
Take your dog to this planet. Sure.
But I did listen to Heart Will Take Me at 1.5 speed and it's like party rock. It's great. It's so beachy. Yeah. That is a good tip.
Yeah.
Do that.
Oh, the sped up.
The sped up version. Because actually this version on Star Trek Enterprise is called Where My Heart Will Take Me instead of standard title. Okay. The scene we get back is all of them in the ship shuttle heading down. It's our main cast. And they're talking about what they're going to do on the trip. Travis is going to go to Galartha, which is kind of sounds sick. A cliff face that changes pitch as you climb it. And this is a trend in this episode is cool shit they describe that takes place off camera.
It's like, wow, look over there. And over there, the camera doesn't move. I will say, as someone who does rock climb, I don't do outside rock climbing. I do like gym bouldering.
Yeah.
But the idea of the motherfucker shifting as I climb is like, oh, that's a really cool way to get injured or so fall down.
When I did it before I had a condition, I like doing the auto belaying or belaying with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the idea that I could let go and I would not injure myself. And I also like going up high. I like that part of it. But I also only ever did it indoors in a gym. So there's a part of this that sounded fun to me, but only in like a very safe way. Like, hover jetpack that activates because it's the fucking future. Come on.
Sure. Like I can imagine the pitch changing being interesting. And then later in the episode, he says also the handholds.
Yeah. And I'm like,
a different fucking thing.
Yeah.
And they do have, there are those like speed climbing walls that have like the holds that like disappear.
Yeah. Which is cool. But
which
it's
are
very
cool. But also like they don't move. Uh-huh. They just go away after a certain amount of time.
Uh-huh.
Or you can like time it, but this is like random generated climbing wall, and it's like you're not even. What are you doing even then? What sport? Anyways, it seems.
I will
dumb.
Say this because it annoyed me how much he described a cool, sick shit off screen. Do yourself a favor and go look up competitive rock climbing. It's insane.
Yeah. It is cool. I'll say that.
Okay, so the rest.
The competitive. The speed one.
The
is
competitive
nuts.
Stuff. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
That literal spider men and women. So Trip and Malcolm, they're gonna fuck.
They're gonna fuck. They're wearing Hawaiian shirts, and they're like, "We're the nasty fuck brothers."
Yes,
and we're gonna go.
The rest of this point, I just refer to them as the blowjob brothers.
Like literally, they're in. Yeah, they're like in the ship going down to the planet, and like it's like Archer, Travis, Hoshi, Trip and Tucker, right? Like our main bridge crew. It's cool that they all get to go, by the way.
Yeah,
the
it
crew.
Is.
Yeah, I'm glad that they all drew the lots and everyone who's important on the ship gets to go.
Yeah.
Everyone but Phlox, who is back hibernating.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. But like they're in the ship being like, where are you going to go? And the two of them are just like, yeah, we're going to see what kind of species are down there and we're going to fuck our way through them.
Yep, exactly.
And it's just kind of like, that's your plan?
That's their plan.
All right.
And they've looked into it. Apparently, that's what you do on Risa.
I mean, that is kind of true. Yeah, that's what you do on Risa is you fuck. Like, it's the fuck planet for fucking. But the whole thing is that, like, they just have for you. Like, there's two kinds of Risas, it seems. And one is like, oh, everyone who lives there is a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there's, like, some parts of it that are, like, hedonism, too.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, you go to the bar and everyone's swinging.
Yep, exactly.
I guess. That's, yeah.
And we get, it feels like we get more of that, but anyway.
Yes.
The last person, Hoshi, she's like, I didn't bring my translator because I just want to immerse myself in language. I want to learn new languages. I haven't in a while. It's kind of funny
in
that she points out.
2 days.
Yes, exactly. But it's funny that she points out that, like, these days my job has just been pressing a button on the translator. It's like, yeah, that's what we've been saying.
Uh huh.
It is boring, even in universe.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we go back as they're cruising down to what's going on Star, on Star Trek Enterprise, the ship.
Going upstairs to see what's on. They're checking in with the show Star Trek Enterprise.
So, yeah.
What's crazy about the episode to me is when every character turned to the camera and said, Maddie, what are you doing right now?
What are you going to do on Risa? T'Pol is captaining.
You got it.
Phlox is up there with his lover assistant. I forgot her name, but she's back.
Yeah.
Kind of funny. She doesn't do anything other than just kind of like be the doctor in residence or whatever.
She's kind of sassy.
She's not very good at it because once we get to any medical problem, she can't handle it. But, you know, whatever. It leads to some fun comedy. The big deal here is Phlox hibernates. His species just doesn't normally sleep, I guess, and hibernates every once in a while. So he's going to take this whole 48 hours to hibernate by being drugged. Like, he has to be put down. Okay. So we get our first...
Did that evolve? Like, how does that work?
I don't get it. Maybe it's a commentary on doctors having to work all the time and then they need drugs to sleep. But, you know, it's not explicit or anything.
Commentary.
Archer, he is in his hotel room, which is going to be one of the primary sets for this episode.
Archer's thing was like, I'm going to do R&R. I'm just going to read.
I will say this.
Chill.
I agree. Best plan. He reads his book on his beautiful balcony. He has his dog there. He goes to the beach. Exactly what I would do on a beach vacation.
T'Pol gives him what's the name of the Vulcan philosopher?
Teachings of Surak.
Surak. Like Shirak. Or Sarak.
I say this because this is how my brain works. I started thinking around this point, wait a minute, how do they pay for this resort vacation? There was a cut scene, actually, where they trade dilithium to pay for it. So
okay.
It's wrapped up in a bow. They just didn't have to make it explicit. Bow. No worries. he brought his dog, by the way. But a thing happens here. He's on his balcony. He looks out and he sees another dog on another balcony. And I don't know why. This didn't freak him the fuck out immediately.
There's a dog?
There's a human dog.
Like a human dog.
A dog from Earth.
An Earth dog. It's like fucked up looking, but it is a real Earth dog. I was really distracted, however, by on the balcony that he looks down on.
Uh-huh.
There's this overhead shot of the other dog on the balcony.
Yeah.
Before the woman comes out and grabs him. It is the exact table I had on my family's porch when I was a kid. Like, that's it amazing. Is like straight up just like the porch set of furniture that you buy at the Sears.
Am I imagining
in 2002?
Does one of the wikis that does Star Trek stuff have like something for every prop that's been on Star Trek?
There's an Instagram account that I love called Star Trek Design.
That's it. Okay.
That catalogs this stuff and does find it, but it's not. It is still working its way through all of Star Trek.
Of course.
It very rarely does Enterprise.
Why would you?
Because I don't think they've put a lot of care into the set dressing just went on this show.
To Sears for this episode.
Like, very often it's like, oh, on Next Gen, they like went to like a cool, trendy, there's like a, a fucking like Met design store, or like a Bang & Olufsen lamp or whatever the fuck.
That was
like,
it's kind like, of a cool like, thing of the
interesting
90s
and
tracks.
Like spacey. And it's like, no, this time they're just like, no, we went to Sears.
Yeah. The Home Depot.
We went to the Sears on Risa.
And I'll say this, the CGI, you know, people, SFX, they did a good job with the like futuristic cliff beach.
Yeah, it doesn't look bad.
Like, it, you know, it's kind of giving the parts of like the South Asia seas, that area, those kind of like massive tall cliffs right on a beach. It's cool looking. And then we get these basically like cheap, normal looking hotel rooms. That's kind of funny, a little discordant. But yeah, so I'm just really confused as why he doesn't care that he's seeing an Earth dog, the farthest any human's ever gone from Earth. I thought that would be notable, but apparently it is not. Because also a human woman comes out, or seemingly, but she's not. She has like kind of very subtle leopard print
she's
skin.
It looks very Trill to me.
Yeah. And
But like Trill, but different color.
Exactly. Yeah, I forgot about that. But it's so subtle, you don't even notice it when she's on the balcony. And when later you see up close, it's like, oh, okay, she's not human. I still want to know what the deal is with the dog. But anyway.
She just has a dog.
The Blowjob Brothers are in a bar, and they're trying to figure out alien physiology. It's crass and crude. Any scene in a comedy about drinking these days, like from 2002, like it's that, but in Star Trek, like this is one of the most, it feels like the culture of the time bleeding right through into a Star Trek scene.
Yeah, a little bit.
Archer, he continues to do his vacation right by reading on his beautiful balcony. Right.
Yeah.
But then we get I'm just going to note here, I think the first time we've seen whatever dog actor, Porthos actor, does mean Porthos. Because I don't think we've seen mean Porthos before.
You've unveiled the second Porthos.
Yeah. Because somehow that, I guess, alien dog is on his balcony. And her balcony was like below.
It was like two stories down and over.
Maybe that's like, the dog jumped.
The balconies are not connected. He's a space dog from space.
Space dog. I don't get it.
Straight up calls him a dog. Also, I'd like to add, since the Universal Translator is back on the ship, what the fuck language is everybody speaking here?
Well, I thought it was just her. I thought it was just Hoshi.
It's unclear.
It's unclear.
It remains unclear what language anybody's speaking at any point in the show.
Ever. We never know because of the Universal Translator what people are speaking.
Like maybe Ryza just has one running all the time everywhere. Possibly. But then that negates some other shit happening later in the episode.
Yeah.
So I repeat, what language are they speaking?
So the dog...
you're like, I don't care.
He finds the dog not long after a knock on his door. It's Kayla, who is played by Dae Young. She has been on both DS9 and TNG.
She sure has.
Not new to Star Trek. No. And this is when I noticed the subtle leopard spots. But... they just have kind of an introductory meeting. Nothing much happens. Now Hoshi, we're figuring out what's her deal on Ryza. She starts talking to some reasons, who I can only, I guess they are like senior swingers. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a couple who are very enchanted by talking to somebody who knows their language. I can't remember if this is from past Star Trek, but is the whole reason thing like they have a little symbol on their forehead? Is that it?
I think that's literally the Ryzen like racial trait.
The Ryzen.
Is they've got a little booper up there. I don't know what it is.
And as they're talking, a guy in the background is like noticing this convo.
Mm-hmm.
And after the couple leaves, he is like, I couldn't help overhearing your conversation. And he's not a Ryzen like the other two we just saw because he doesn't have the forehead.
He's got a weird forehead.
He's got some ridges, but you know, he's a hunk. He's handsome.
He's a ridged hunk.
Yeah. And I think you might think there's something like nefarious about what he's doing here.
Yeah.
But
it's
a little, I like their scenes because there's a little bit of a like, where is this going?
It's an interesting parallel to the Archer scenes.
Exactly.
I will say for this episode, despite it kind of sucking and being boring, they actually do a pretty good job of making all the storylines kind of rhyme in a way that is like decent television writing. And I'm like, hey, someone put 10 minutes of effort into this one. Good for you.
I just wish there were more interesting storylines and the acting was better.
Mm-hmm.
Hoshi, I will say, I think does a pretty good job here, actually. And I didn't even notice who this actor was, but their scenes
The ridged hunk.
The ridged hunk.
I will also say, Dae Young, by the way, famous for being the mean saleswoman in Pretty Woman.
Oh!
Big mistake. Huge.
Good call. Oh my God. Uh-huh.
But I love the hunk is from Language Planet.
Right. Incredibly like, confusing Language Planet.
And, and she's like, what language do you speak? And he's like, it's called blah, 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 blah. Like, it makes a crazy, unrepeatable noise with his mouth.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, say it slower. And he's like, no, it's so clear to me that the actor couldn't do it twice.
Well, he's like, if I say it slower, it changes the meaning, which is like, okay, kind of fun language joke there, but also you can't say that again.
You can't say that again, my man. But he's like, even people on my own own planet can't speak the language well. And I was like, how the fuck did it develop as a language then?
That doesn't work.
It makes no sense.
Back to the blowjob.
Surely a Creole or a pigeon would have been developed that people can actually speak, my dude. Like, perhaps.
Yeah. So, back to the blowjob brothers. They are talking about Vulcan sex lives, and they can't believe Vulcans would really only have sex every 7 years.
Gross.
But they finally meet someone to talk to.
The first thing, I don't know if we skipped over it, but there's the bit where, like, one of them goes like, I want to have sex with that one right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one's like, I think it might be the wrong pronoun for that person.
Yeah.
And they're like, who can tell who's a man or a woman around here because of alien gender or sex or whatever.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, that's what, okay. That's what I meant by like the culture of the time is really seeping in here of how crass it is. And so they meet some sexy Ryzen ladies.
Oh, baby.
And they want to chat and they're hitting it off.
They want to go in the champagne room.
Also, I will say this. They're in like a very cheap looking set. It's a club, but it's just they've had more interesting like nightclubs on this series when they had budget for it, of course.
Yes. But, no, it's so clear that they just like went to whatever was on the lot that kind of resembled it and then put like some wiggly glassware things in the background.
Yeah. Okay, back to Archer and Kayla. They're just having a chat about their home planets. She's extraordinarily vague, but it's nice. Like, their scenes aren't terrible, but I would say Hoshi's are better. It's
they're fine.
And, you know, he's looking at it through his telescope, and that's where we kind of get that, like, this, you know, we're so far away, 70-odd light years or whatever. 90? I think it was 90. Back to the Blowjob Brothers. They are reminiscing about Space Pod 1, the worst episode of Star Trek Enterprise so far. But I guess they did do kind of heroic shit in it, so they're, you know.
I mean, that was our most Blowjob Brother episode.
You're right,
so far.
That's true. And so at this point, the Ryzens are like, let's go to the subterranean gardens. They take them down a staircase that is very clearly, very quickly, just like the cellar at this club. It's full of like wine and or whatever. And then the two girls shapeshift. They start asking, do you have any valuables? And they're like, what? I think we're a little mistaken here. And then they shapeshift into like really gross looking goblin aliens.
They transform into identical goblins.
Yeah.
And they rob them.
And they get mugged, basically. catching up with Travis, he had a rock climbing accident and needs to go back to the Enterprise stat. And I really like this joke when to Paul is like meeting him at the space pod and he's like, I went to an alien hospital. It was terrible. It's like, have you ever been to an alien hospital? And she's like, yes, in San Francisco. I was like, good
pretty
joke.
Good.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good.
But this is where he says that like they didn't just change angle. The wall, the handhelds moved around. And it's like, yeah, I think you probably should have thought about that before you attempted, but
yeah,
not proper rock climbing safety precautions, I don't think.
No, it's not. I feel like a rope would be good or just anything.
Yeah, partner to spot you, maybe
to belay you.
We are back with the Blowjob Brothers and they're in their underwear
and they're tied up. It's a classic distress position.
Yeah, they don't want to get caught this way. They'd be really embarrassed if Archer found them.
Yeah, that's the funny thing about this one is that there's no stakes to
exactly.
It. It's just kind of like, well, if we don't make the pod back, they'll scan for our bio signs and you don't want the captain to see you like this, do you?
Yeah.
And it's like, who cares?
Exactly. There's no mortal danger. The entire thing is their embarrassment here. That's the stakes. And it's like, this is such a bad plot line anyway. I want them to be embarrassed. I hope that's what happens.
We also get what used to be for a long time, my Blue Sky and Twitter header image.
Oh, really?
Which was, which is Reed yelling, they were male. They're arguing with each other whose fault it is.
Yeah.
And Trip's like, you're the, you know, or like Reed is like, you know, you got us into this. And Trip is like, no, there's some like sexy ladies. And Malcolm goes, they were male. pretty good. We love to talk about this on Star Trek.
Yeah. It's like the second time this has come up after the
in this episode. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So now we're back. Where are we? Oh, Travis really wants to wake up Dr. Phlox because he's in a lot of pain. And it seems like it's not just his injuries, but that at that alien hospital, he maybe had an alien painkiller that he's not having a good reaction with.
Yeah.
They'd never encountered a human before, which, you know, that's the case. They're the first humans to ever come here. So then I think we have Hoshi and the Hunk. They're conversing. They're eating a fruit. She eats a fruit that she says, this tastes like a kiwi. And it's like,
That's a kiwi.
Because she's like, we don't have a word for this, but we call it strawberries. And it's like, you're holding a strawberry?
Yeah.
Exactly. I think it's really cool that it's like this very 90s, early 2000s kind of show. And the two fruits she holds up is a kiwi and a strawberry, making, of course, our favorite 90s flavor. Kiwi strawberry.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But, you know, kiwi means kiss in the guy's language. So he like leans in after she is like,
how come it's kiwi and not like, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah. I mean, if you saw that, I don't know if you had subtitles on, but it was spelled like K-E-I apostrophe W-A-I. So it was,
oh my God,
kiwi or something like.
Also another language gripe about this episode. Sorry, this really bugged me. Is earlier in the episode when Hoshi is talking ricin to the ricins. It's like Latin. They say say something about it's like really close. They say something about the moon and you hear the word Luna. Of course. I'm like, all right, man. Like, I just so lazy.
Put
is that not in the budget either, Brannon?
Didn't they do some effort on the like the Klingon language episode, right?
Klingon the language had been already very codified
by
that
point.
That's
true. How could I forget?
Like, Klingon's really developed already. It was like fans in the 90s, like,
yeah, they have a
or
like
earlier
a
the 70s and 80s, like, yeah, had already like they like already had like Klingon dictionaries by this point.
You are carrying on a legacy with Star Trek. Put some work in. Put some
hey, respect me, the viewer, would you?
Now we're at Kayla, and this is where we get some of her backstory.
Yeah.
And it's sad. Her whole family was murdered by the Suliban.
Whoops.
Oh no. Archer is like, huh? And so this is we haven't gotten any like indication of where this plot was going until this point, other than like, oh, she's pretty circumspect when it comes to her.
Yeah.
Like who she is and what she does.
Sure.
But of course we're thinking as audience, like, oh, does she know Archer's deal? Cause this has literally happened recently where someone had heard about Archer's heroics vis-a-vis the Suliban, but it doesn't seem like that's the case, at least not right now.
It's like, and it's suspect because like nobody's heard of the Suliban. So somebody else bringing it up to you is like, well, are you a Suliban? Like what's the deal? Something's up with you. Immediately it's like, yeah.
Back on the Enterprise, they're waking up Phlox with some, an injection. And
it's like 7 minutes of just like screwball comedy.
Suddenly it's good. He's extremely groggy and extremely grumpy. It's just like, you know, waking somebody up who's in a deep sleep to the nth degree. And it's pretty entertaining, but I honestly think the best part of the scene is he does an incredible pratfall when he finally like jumps out of bed and is just like, right this way, and then immediately falls.
So funny.
It's very good.
He's really, his sleepy acting is also very good. I like
it. And it's like Doctor Assistant and T'Pol who are dealing with him. So
yeah.
I said here, the doctor is zooted, but he keeps at it. Because he's trying to figure out Scott's or Travis's deal. He is diagnosing and at one point is like, we need to go to Malachor 5 or whatever to warp, and they're like, doctor, maybe you should sit down. But I guess he's doing it as much as he seems like half aware of what's happening. Back on Ryza, Archer and Kayla, I don't know, I forget how they even pronounce it.
Hey, it's none of my business. I'm devoting 90 to 112% of my mental energy to pronouncing T'Pol correctly.
Good.
Despite her not even really being in this episode.
No, not really. They are sharing some Ryzen wine. She fell badly on their beach walk. Again, cool stuff happening on this beach, but we do not see it.
Sounds like a cool beach. I bet it's really beautiful.
She starts talking way more about the Suliban, and she knows about the temporal Cold War, but not in name. She doesn't name drop it, but she does know they're time travel, or they're getting like their genetic technology from the future. She knows they can shapeshift. So she doesn't.
She's like, I've never like, what do they look like? They're invisible. Like,
yeah.
What's their deal? Yeah.
Yeah. So she doesn't just like know about the Suliban. She knows a lot about their deal. So it's like, this is getting even more suspicious. And he's just clamming up.
Yeah.
Because again, he has a reason to be suspicious because this has literally happened. Both he's been like pulled one over by people who are also enemies of the Suliban, but also he's been like thought of as a hero warrior by people who are also enemies of the Suliban. So it's like he has good reason to be suspicious. And the thing is the writer, I think, mentioned something about wanting to make his plot line in this a bit like a Hitchcock kind of like mystery, and they're like noirish. And it's like,
this is like, yeah, I mean, listen, man, if you
big
and watched
reach.
Vertigo while somebody hit you in the head with a hammer in this episode, I guess. Like, I
see now what you were trying to do, and boy, did you miss the mark.
It's not very good.
So he pulls out a little thing, and what he's doing is bioscanning her, and then he, like, makes up a reason for, let's go back down to the beach. It'd be nice. And it's like, I guess her injury's fine now, because I thought that was why you were here, but she goes off to get, like, a jacket, basically. And while she's out, he calls up to Paul and is like, check this bioscan out. And she comes back, and I think he is trying to do a bit of a, like, detective sort of, like, I figured you out. And he's like,
yeah.
So why are you Tendaren? You know, which, reminder, that's who Colonel Gratt was.
In the episode where they were in the prison.
I did not remember them having, he mentions, like, your surgery's good. Like,
yeah.
Because he knew what they looked like, and is like, you don't look like one of them. And here's the thing, she denies it the whole time. And I don't, like, of course, I imagine the bioscan is correct. I thought it was kind of interesting that she never actually just gives in to, like, what her deal is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you must be from Colonel Gratt. And if it's not him, then who are you working for? And before
the surgeons did a pretty good job. You could, if you were, say, a trans person watching this episode, which I don't know anyone who would be, you could take offense at a couple of junctions here. Those surgeons did a pretty good job on you.
Wow.
You can't even tell what you really are. Clayton.
This episode. God damn.
I'm not really offended. It's just very funny to me.
Yeah, it's notable. Blowjob Brothers escaped. We know this because everyone's now back on the ship.
Yeah. It doesn't really detail how they escape really that much, well, right?
They wrap it up again. They did not waste budget actually showing the action, which is they knocked over a bottle of whatever liquor that apparently very bad. Because now they're, like, dirty and stained, but he's like, I needed something sharp to cut the ropes. It's like, okay.
Right.
That writer thought up something really cool. Good thing you didn't have to shoot it, I guess. so they, you know, they're walking out of the club in their underwear, and they get some towels to warm up. And they're on the shuttle. Oh, Archer also just, like, wakes up. She's gone. There's not even, like, a note. I thought we were going to get something.
No, nothing that even, like, gives us a clue as to who she was. Nothing.
And that's the thing. It's like, I liked at first how incredibly vague it was, but I thought that's because we were going to get a hint, a morsel. Instead, it's just like, maybe it comes back because it leads
sometimes
up to the finale.
Sometimes a woman's weird to you.
But yeah, it's a vacation. It's, you know, what happens on Risa. Risa stays there. Also, Hoshi wakes up with her bow because they did it. The only person
who fucked
on this episode was Hoshi. What a swerve.
This whole time, Clayton, you were looking for the blowjob brothers, but you forgot in your foolishness to look for a single blowjob sister.
It's an egg on my face. There's something else. Oh.
Whoa, hey now, stinky, some sort of stinky liquor that we never see.
And yeah, they get on the shuttle, leave. Boring. That's it.
End of episode.
That was Risa after all the buildup.
Yeah, it's like that episode, all this stuff happens, like nothing really goes on, and then just like Archer turns to camera and just goes, episode over.
Yeah. I don't even want to talk about it anymore because I want to talk about something. I want to say I have a new website.
What?
This is a cool thing. It had to be kept under wraps until now.
Not even I knew of this.
Yeah, I had to keep it real, real
tight. You're a science officer, even.
I'm a science. Oh, yeah. Rogue.site is a new website launched by me and a couple other of my former colleagues from Polygon. It's going to be about games and all sorts of things that touch gaming. I'm doing a podcast there, actually, so you can hear me elsewhere if you'd like. It's about this anime series called Pat's Labor, giant robot series from the 80s. But what's cool about it is because the series is called Pat Labor, we found a reason to do a show that's also half about labor history.
Ooh.
And what's cool about it is this anime is one of the few that has a direct connection to that, where it was actually founded, or the copyright and properties owned by an artist collective. Very rare thing in the very exploitative anime and manga industry. So it's me, Patrick Gill, and Toussaint Egan. Toussaint especially knows a ton about anime. So we have an expert. We have
that's
Pat.
Cool.
He's going to be learning about labor for us. That's his labor. That's why it's called Pat's Labor.
Now, it's interesting. You said the animation studio was artist owned.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything interesting about the rogue.site?
It's similar. We are worker-owned, ad-free.
Look at that.
Membership reader supported. So if you like us, you can get a free email sign up. You'll just be able to access a ton of stuff on there, but you can access more by subscribing, and we'd appreciate that. Keeps us running and doing more in the future. So I appreciate all the people who subscribed already, and check it out, rogue.site.
I'm going to subscribe right now because I forgot to actually subscribe.
Thank you.
It's fine. Listen, here's the thing. It's really hard to get people to remember to subscribe to things. So what you have to do is call them individually.
Yes. This is the next strategy.
Mm-hmm. Anywho.
I also want to shout out because I, until now, was just sitting on my pre-order. I thought you were going to make a joke.
Oh, no.
Simplicity. I read Simplicity on my beach trip as well, and it's a beautiful book, and I think everyone should go read it. Please, please do.
That's very kind of you. You could buy that.
I called it Serenity before the podcast, so I felt
bad. You did. Yeah. Well, you were thinking about Alan Tudyk.
Yeah, of course.
As you are at all times. And your friend, Joss Whedon, who you approve of everything he's ever done or said, I think is what you were saying before the... Before your recording, you said, that Joss Whedon guy, I just love everything he's ever done and said. That's what he said to me.
It's what I
So I just want everyone to know when you're supporting Rogue.site, that's what you're supporting.
Yeah.
Is not Joss Whedon, a different guy called Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon.
That I've invented.
Zing, gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Anyways.
This has been Temporal Culture War. I've been Clayton Ashley.
And I have been and will always be Manuel Chainsby.
Let's go.
And as always, let's go. Episode over.
Episode over.